It's 6:20. This is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. Dallas ISD and eight other local school districts are now faced with the challenge of how they will eventually provide bus service to tens of thousands of students. That comes after yesterday's election when voters decided to dismantle Dallas County Schools. The bus agency has faced various financial mismanagement and safety issues. The agency will continue to provide bus service until the end of this school year. Meanwhile, the Texas Comptroller will soon appoint what's called a dissolution committee. It will include representatives from the school districts served by the bus agency. Michael Hinojosa is superintendent of the Dallas School District.
Early in 2018, districts will have to decide whether they're going to outsource this very important service that we all depend on, whether they're going to develop their own, or maybe a hybrid where a number of the districts go in together in a cooperative arrangement to provide those services for their community.
There's also the question of what happens to Dallas County bus drivers and other employees. Hinojosa says they'll have opportunities to continue working, either for an outsourced company or a school district that decides to run its own bus service.
I want to assure the bus drivers and the dispatchers and all the employees of DCS that they have a position, that they're highly needed for the next several months, and regardless of what happens in the future, these entities will still need transportation services.
In a statement, Dallas County Schools says it's disheartened with yesterday's outcome and that the agency will focus on providing bus service through the end of the school year and a smooth transition. The Texas Department of Public Safety today released the names of those killed in Sunday's church shooting at Sutherland Springs. There are 26 victims, including an unborn child. Vice President Mike Pence flew to Texas this afternoon. He met privately with survivors at Brooke Army Medical Center in San Antonio. The vice president is in Sutherland Springs and expected to speak this evening at a prayer vigil at Floresville High School. After a tragedy, people often want to find a way to help. And after Sunday's church shooting in Sutherland Springs, people across the country have been springing into action to show their support. But as KERA's Christopher Connolly reports, experts say it's critical to make sure donations go to the people who need them.
Sandy Ward lost her daughter-in-law and two granddaughters in the shooting. Her five-year-old grandson was shot multiple times and remains in the hospital in critical condition. Ward says the community support has amazed her. People are delivering meals to homes and hospitals. Funeral costs, she says, are being covered.
We have people here that are donating flowers for the caskets, those big sprays. We have one gentleman that's custom-making coffins for people.
Ward knows people outside the area want to help, too, by sending money to support survivors or families of victims, but she worries they might get taken advantage of. She's bothered by campaigns on the crowdfunding platform GoFundMe that say they've been set up to help her grandson. Now, there could be some confusion here. Perhaps extended family members are trying to help out, but Ward says none of the accounts were set up at the request of the immediate family in Sutherland Springs.
We don't have any accounts on GoFundMe, and I know I've seen at least three of them.
It's really tough to verify that the person that you are contributing to through a GoFundMe or through a crowdfunding source is the actual person.
Miguel Segura is the San Antonio Regional Director of the Better Business Bureau. His organization tracks charity scams and says there's always an uptick after big natural disasters or high-profile shootings like Sutherland Springs or Las Vegas.
It's very easy for a scammer to go on and, you know, screenshot pictures here and there of people through Facebook or just through a simple Google image search.
Segura says crowdfunding sites like GoFundMe have gotten better about making sure the people launching the campaigns are who they say they are and ensuring that the money goes where it's supposed to. GoFundMe wouldn't do an interview but said in an email that it holds on to the funds until the beneficiary is verified and that people should report suspicious campaigns. Still, the Better Business Bureau, Segura, says donors should be skeptical, do their research, and ask lots of questions, whether they give on crowdfunding platforms or to traditional charities.
It falls on the consumer to go into that website to find out what procedures are in place, to find out, you know, what happens if this is a scam. Can I get my money back? What am I going to be getting charged for here? Are there any particular fees incorporated with this?
And Segura says there's no need to rush. Whether it's a natural disaster or a mass shooting, survivors will need help for quite a while. So it's worth taking the time to make sure that donation is actually going to the people who need it. Christopher Connolly, KERA News.
Victims of Sutherland Springs Donation Fund has been set up at Wells Fargo. Donations can be made at any branch of the bank. Authorities also suggest making a blood donation through the Red Cross. The mass shooting in Sutherland Springs has many thinking about what to do if we find ourselves in harm's way. Dallas Police Officer Dave Wilson leads active shooter training sessions for North Texas community groups and businesses. He talked with KERA's Chris Boyd about how to stay safe.
So ideally, when SWAT officers arrive on the scene of something like this, they have on Kevlar, bulletproof gear, they have weapons with them. Let's assume for the sake of argument that civilians don't have those things when a mass shooting begins. What should they do?
Well, there's a couple things. In my program, I use the Department of Homeland Security's Run, Hide, Fight video. Several years ago, DHS developed that Run, Hide, Fight protocol. And if you can run out of the facility, obviously, that's the best protocol to get out first. If you don't or can't get out, then have a area or room in that property behind hard cover that you could shut the door, lock it if you can, and use that as a shelter-in-place area. While you're in that room, also devise a plan of attack on the assailant if he breaches that room. And that's one of the things, or several of the things that I go through in my class.
How do you attack somebody who outnumbers you in terms of weapons and resources?
Well, the first thing I recommend people doing, if you're face-to-face with an assailant, you need to control as best you can the thing killing people, which is the weapon, okay? You may remember last year, those Air Force soldiers on that French train, they came face-to-face with an active shooter and an assault rifle, and they actually controlled that weapon and then eventually defeated him and saved countless people on that train. If you can, that's the first thing I recommend you doing, is controlling the weapon if you're able to, number one. Number two, oh, and of course, always challenge the assailant. Number two is that use improvised weapons, whether it's a chair, whether it's a fire extinguisher. We have weapons on our bodies, and that's one of the things I cover, that we're born with, that we can improvise as weapons. And some of those things are long, cylindrical, rigid objects. And so after you've controlled the primary weapon, how do you incapacitate the assailant to where he's no longer killing people? And so you have to deploy those weapons, those improvised weapons, long, cylindrical, rigid objects, into soft tissue areas of the assailant that's going to greatly benefit you.
When you say challenge the assailant, do you mean make eye contact and say, cut this out? What do you mean?
Well, if he is killing people and has exhibited that ability, challenge him as far as controlling the weapon. So if you cannot get out, and there's no way, it's kind of like a rabid dog cornered in the corner of a room. You know, the run, hide, fight, or the fight, flight syndrome, right? That animal is either going to fight or he's going to lay down and perish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, that's just the cold, hard facts. If you're able to fight, have the intestinal fortitude and the training to do that, then you can possibly do that. And you have to challenge them in the best way you can to increase your chances of survival.
That was Dallas Police Officer Dave Wilson talking with Chris Boyd. You can listen to more of their conversation at think.kera.org. And coming up tomorrow morning, the Lone Star Film Festival opens in Fort Worth. And this year's event includes several films with Fort Worth ties. A big screen team looks at the lineup with the festival's executive director. That's tomorrow at 8:22 during Morning Edition. This evening brings us cloudy skies, 40% chance for showers with a low around 43. Tomorrow should be mostly sunny with a slightly warmer high around 58. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.